Is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Wednesday, July 21st, 2021. Just 9 days from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. Producing from the shores of California is Mr. Malibu, Nathan Garcia. I'm Buster Only, working from my home in New York. And let's start with this. Congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis. And here's my question for you, Nathan, okay? We hear all the time that he hasn't been interested in being part of a so-called super team, joining other stars in this, some destination. He gave voice to that after the game last night. I think other stars will want to go to Milwaukee now to play with him because he's demonstrated such incredible unselfishness and grace. What do you think? Like, if I'm Dame Lillard, I want to play with that guy because he is so unselfish and he's so classy.
Yep, I agree. It was cool to see all the Bucks players just with humble interviews after the game, and they did it the hard way. Giannis said in an interview, you know, it's easy to go to a super team and do your part and get a championship, but he won it the way it should be, and yeah, I think other players will respect that, and we'll see if Milwaukee kind of turns into the next big market.
Yeah, the destination market. You know, if people, you know, other, if Dame Lillard's saying, you know what, I want to go to a Brewers game. You know, I want to play for the Bucks, but I want to go to a Brewers game. We'll see how that goes. All right, back to baseball. The Astros are rolling, led by their second baseman.
Altuve drives one deep to left field. Has he done it on the anniversary? Yes, he has! Jose Altuve celebrates 10 years with a leadoff home run.
Stay fair.
Down the left field line, and that ball is a fair ball. He's hit another one.
Jose Altuve crushed home runs number 21 and 22 of the season. They win that game. And last night, a big comeback for the Dodgers against the Giants. Bottom of the ninth inning, the Giants with a 6-5 lead. Will Smith came to the plate, two runners on base.
0-1 to Will Smith. And a fly ball to left field, well hit, back to the wall, and Smith walks it off with a three-run home run. The Dodgers' third walk-off win of the year, and they come from behind to beat the Giants.
That sound from AM 570 LA Sports. Not all of the news was good for the Dodgers yesterday. Mookie Betts has dealt with multiple nagging injuries this season, but perhaps none of those ailments have lingered as long as a right hip injury that forced him out of the starting lineup against the Giants for the third consecutive game on Tuesday. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said this is the worst Betts has felt with injuries all year. There was a lot of injury news about stars yesterday. Mike Trout made further progress in recovering from his right calf strain when he ran the bases in Oakland prior to Tuesday's game. Chris Bryant, one of the names we're talking about leading up the trade deadline, made an early exit from Tuesday's game against the Cardinals, departing in the fifth inning because of right hamstring fatigue. Alex Bregman, the Astros all-star shortstop, has been on the injured list since training his left quad on June 16th, could be sent out to a minor league rehabilitation assignment in the next few days. Chris Sale was outstanding yesterday in a rehab start in Double-A. He faced 12 batters over 3 2/3 innings, and he struck out 6, walked 1. His fastball was clocked as high as 97 miles per hour. The quote from Sale, "It was a good day, definitely a step in the right direction. I felt good throughout the entire game. Even in the third and fourth inning, I felt like I was able to create some arm speed and make pitches when I needed to, which at this stage in the game is key." The question now, could he make his next appearance in the big leagues against the Yankees on Sunday at Fenway Park? The Yankees were in Yankee Stadium last night, and Gary Sanchez got a big hit.
Swung on and hit in the air to deep left. That ball is high. That is far. That is gone. Over the wall, over the grandstand, into the bleachers. A tremendous home run. The Kraken cracks one.
That sound from WFAN. The Yankees win that game 6-4 over the Philadelphia Phillies. The National League East continues to tighten. We talked about the Phillies losing last night. The first place Mets were in Cincinnati, and they fell behind in the bottom of the third inning when Joey Votto did this.
Oh, this is hit high and deep to right center, and you can kiss that baby goodbye. 2-1 Reds. Votto got every bit of that and then some. Oh, my. Boy, that's fun when they hit them like that.
Whew. That sound from 700 WLW. The Reds win that game 4-3. The Braves, one of the teams chasing the Mets, beat the Padres 2-1 with help from Freddie Freeman.
Darvish has set down 11 of the last 12 as Freddie hits one a mile high toward left. Fan going back at 375. He's not going to get it. Freddie Freeman goes opposite field and the Braves take the lead.
The Nationals seem to be drawing closer by the day. They faced the Marlins yesterday, and Trey Turner came through with a score tied 3-3 in the bottom of the sixth.
Pitch to Turner. His line drive, base hit right center field. Rounding third, coming home is Hernandez. Pinch runner Gerardo Parra headed to third. He's in there standing, and the Nationals lead 4-3. Trey Turner drives in the go-ahead run. RBI number 47, and the Nationals are back in front here in the sixth inning.
Washington wins that game 6-3. Now, before that game, Nationals general manager Mike Rizzo says he doesn't plan on having infielder Starlin Castro back with the team this season. The quote from Mike Rizzo before the game, he said to a reporter, "You asked the question, do I plan on having Starlin Castro back? And I said, I do not plan on having him back." And the Oakland ballpark situation seems to have reached a possible tipping point again. Where that city council vote actually went in favor of keeping building a ballpark proposal for the Athletics, but there was language change in that proposal that they discussed. By the end of the day, Rob Manfred sent out words through the Associated Press, quote, "We are disappointed the city council chose to vote on a proposal to which the A's had not agreed. We will immediately begin conversations with the A's to chart a path forward for the club." We're going to be talking with Paul Ambichides and with David Schoenfield about that. Before that, however, relive one of the greatest icons and most successful teams in sports history, Michael Jordan and the 1997-98 Chicago Bulls. Stream the Emmy and NAACP Image Award-winning series, The Last Dance, on ESPN+. Nathan?
Don't forget, you can listen to the Lopos Hoop Collective crossover podcast reacting to Game 6 of the NBA Finals, where Giannis and the Bucks won it all. They recorded it late last night, and if you've already subscribed to either show, then it's already in your feed. You can follow the Lopos and the Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst wherever you listen to your podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Welcome to the show!
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show, mate.
Welcome to the show. Whoa!
Welcome to the show, baby.
You're in the show with David Schoenfield.
David Schoenfield covers baseball for ESPN. And Dave, all I can say is, first off, how are you doing today?
Well, we got the big Seattle Kraken expansion draft tonight, Buster. I'm sure you're following how that's going to go.
Not as closely as the Milwaukee Bucks. I gotta say, you know, I grew up a huge fan of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lew Alcindor before that with Milwaukee Bucks. I was a Lakers fan growing up, but I always had sort of a fondness for the Bucks. So that's where my mind is today. I can't say the Kraken are at the top of the list. Kraken for me is Gary Sanchez.
Yeah, you know, I did watch the NBA game last night after watching the Mets lose. Great story. I was a big fan of those late 70s, early 80s Bucks teams with Sidney Moncrief and Bob Lanier, and then they later added Jack Sikma from my beloved Sonics. First title in 50 years. Great for the fans of Milwaukee.
Yeah, Sidney Moncrief was great in Stratomatic basketball. Step down defender. I absolutely remember that. All right, I want to start with this. This is classic Sarah Langs, okay? I have her on the podcast twice a week. I'll basically say to her, hey, what do you have before we get our segments, do our segment tapings? And I did that yesterday, and she didn't mention that she was the in-booth analyst for that YouTube broadcast that was outfitted only with women, okay? With Melanie Newman, with Alana Rizzo. And I'm like, after I see the news later in the day, I'm like, Sarah, what are you doing?
You know? Well, look, we all know Sarah's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. But if she's going to go into television, Buster, she's got to develop a little ego here, start publicizing herself, you know, build this up, you know. No, seriously, good for her. That was a great idea for YouTube, all women. Sarah's, moved up in the world from just being your little podcast side host here. So happy for her, what she's accomplishing.
Yeah, all I know is she better be ready to talk about it tomorrow. Okay? She's coming on the podcast tomorrow, and I'm just going to blitz her with questions about this because she didn't tell me, didn't give me a heads up yesterday. But I'm with you. I'm so happy for her and, her getting a chance to do that. It was neat, too, the signs that were some fans were holding up, referencing, you know, the women in the booth. That was pretty neat. All right. There are going to be a lot of signs up in Boston maybe this weekend about Chris Sale and his return. We'll wait and hear from Alex Cora probably later today about what the plans are. But shoot, Dave, after watching the highlights of Chris Sale's outing last night, I got to believe that his next outing might happen for the Red Sox in the big leagues, maybe on Sunday against the Yankees, because he looks filthy.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. 3.2 hitless innings in his AA rehab start. He hit 96. So he looks ready to go, you know. And the trade deadline's been slow. So there's a chance when Chris Sale joins that Boston rotation, that is going to be the biggest addition that we see this month, you know, depending on how many big moves we get, you know, over the next week at the deadline. But the Red Sox played it smart, brought him kind of slowly along, didn't rush him back, and they're going to get 2 months of a great pitcher.
Boy, I got to say, I had a baseball source tell me in February, predict how differently the timelines would play out and the summers would play out for Noah Syndergaard of the Mets and Chris Sale of the Red Sox. Those two guys had Tommy John surgery within a week of each other. But the backdrop was different for both guys. Noah Syndergaard came into the year, you know, this is his free agent season, and he had every motivation to get back on the field as soon as possible. The Mets had every motivation to get him back on the field as soon as possible, to get as much production out of him before he hit the free agent market. And I remember when I saw that the report in spring training about him throwing 98 miles per hour, I was kind of cringing. Yep. Like, man, that less than a year from that Tommy John surgery, that felt a little fast. And sure enough, he wound up breaking down. Chris Sale, because he has 3 years left on the contract, beyond this year, the Red Sox slow played him. It was almost like they put him out of sight, out of mind. Chris, go do your rehabilitation. Take your time. Check all the boxes. Make sure you're okay. And wow, there could be a huge payoff for them because those highlights of that slider, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know it's been 2 years since we've seen him, but, you know, let's not forget, this guy was one of the top five starters in baseball. So if he's even close to that, you know, they have their number one guy that they need to head that rotation. Now, compare that to the Mets, not only Syndergaard, but Carlos Carrasco made his rehab start last night. 1.2 innings, 3 walks, 3 home runs allowed. So based on that outing, he's nowhere near close to being ready. And that Mets rotation is a mess right now with DeGrom injured. They started Jared Eichhoff the other night. He got DFA'd because his defense made 4 errors behind him. They started Robert Stock last night. He got hurt running out of ground ball, and they had to burn through another bullpen game. Taiwan Walker only got 1 out his last outing. So I think if I make one prediction for the trade deadline, it's the Mets are going to have to get a starting pitcher.
Yeah, there's no doubt that of all the teams, if you were to rank them 1 through 30 in terms of needs, for me, the Mets would be number 1. I'm going to be asking Paul and Bacchides about that coming up as well. Speaking of the trade deadline, 9 days away, and have you noticed there's like no trades, Dave? You're not getting, and I, you know, I have a theory about it and why this is taking place this way. I want to hear your theory.
Well, yeah, I love to hear yours. Look, we build this trade deadline up every year, and it's fun. We love the hype. We love the rumors. It usually is a bit of a letdown from reality. You know, we usually don't end up getting 10 stars traded, and I don't think that's going to happen. Even though there's a lot of teams in the race or on the fringes of the races, but I just don't know if there is that incentive for teams to make these marginal upgrades and give up prospects in the process. They're so locked in on keeping these cost-controlled young players, even if they're a roll of the dice on whether they're going to be good players. They don't want to give anybody up. So that's my theory. You know, marginal upgrades aren't worth the trades.
And I also think that in a buyer's market, and I believe that by the time we get the last 48 hours before the deadline, that's what it's going to evolve into. In a buyer's market, you might simply be having a standoff, a stalemate, a stare down. Because a lot of these teams that, you know, would be sellers probably, you know, they have the prices high or they're waiting to declare themselves.
Right.
And so you have a lot of teams I know who are potential buyers are sitting back and waiting going, you know what? At some point, they're going to have to drop those prices because at some point, the polarity of the standings that we've talked about, so many teams seemingly locked into to playoff spots. They're going to feel like there's a volume of players who are going to become available.
Right.
So I kind of wonder if that's what's contributing to this. You only have a few teams who are actually out there, like the Chicago Cubs, like the Minnesota Twins, who are, you know, talking about players who are available. A lot of the other would-be sellers, I don't think have gotten to that point yet.
Right. And I have an article today, you know, 5 teams on the fringe, you know, the Reds, National, Braves, Mariners, Blue Jays. You know, these teams that, you know, none of them are in a playoff spot right now. They're not out of it. So they're going to wait as long as possible. You know, if they have a good week, maybe they look to make another trade or two. If they have a bad week, not that necessarily they're going to sell, but they're not going to add. So if, you know, if the Mariners, you know, they play Houston and Oakland coming up on a homestand. If they have a good homestand and they're only 1 or 2 games behind Oakland in that wild card race, maybe they make a trade. If they lose 6 out of 7, maybe they trade Mitch Haniger and Kendall Graveman. So those teams, they're still figuring out where they're at.
Let's break down those 5 teams that you just mentioned and just sort of walk through them and what's likely to happen, see if we agree on this. With the Cincinnati Reds, the X factor there is always, always, always owner Bob Castellini, who is, you know, one of the damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead owners. If they even sniff the possibility of contending, then he is the guy who's going to say, go for it. You know, I've had people with other teams say, you know, they really should be out there marketing Castellanos. You know, if you really wanted to manage this payroll and set themselves up, set them up better for the future, they should be having those conversations because with the Brewers leading the division by as much as they are with that logjam, you know, that we're seeing in the National League West and those teams probably having an inside track on the wild card. It's hard to see how the Reds make the playoffs, but Castellini is one guy who, if he has a 10% chance, he's going to go for it. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's my feeling. They're 6.5 out, which is that's a big gap. The Brewers seem pretty slump-proof with that rotation. Castellanos, right, he has an opt-out clause right after this year, so he could leave. You know, there's the Luis Castillo rumors, who still has two more years of team control. I wouldn't trade him. You know, he's been great the last nine starts. He's back on track, but you need him next year. But I'm with you. It does make some sense to trade Castellanos, but they're not going to do it. I don't see it.
Nope.
They're trying to win. They were built to win last year. They made the playoffs, didn't score a run in the playoffs. They thought they had a chance this year, but I would be surprised if they end up trading players away.
In part because the Nationals won the World Series 2 years ago, I just don't see them packing it in.
Yeah.
I think that their general manager, Mike Rizzo, is wonderfully competitive. And everything that's happened in the National League East in the last month for the Nationals would make me feel, if I'm in his shoes and I'm wearing the ring that he's wearing, feel like, you know what, let's play this out because we're not competing against immortal teams. What do you think?
No, yeah, they're five out from what I'm hearing.
Juan Soto's going crazy.
Strasburg supposedly back right around the trade deadline. And also they have a whole bunch of games left against the Mets, Phillies, and Braves. I think it's 11 against two of those teams and nine against the other one. So a lot of head-to-head matchups for them to make up ground. I'm with you. I don't think Max Scherzer is going to get traded.
The Atlanta Braves. I love the fact that Alex Anthopoulos went out. He looked to add Jock Peterson, Stephen Vogt. Do I think they'll go out and make a big deal? No. I think they're kind of at this point, they've made the moves that they're going to make, give themselves a shot, and effectively run out a ground ball in a year in which it's probably not going to work out. But they also know this, they got a Noah and they got Travis d'Arnaud coming back in the first 2 weeks of August.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering, Buster. I know you think they might be done. I still think if they can squeak out that division, that's a team, if that rotation is healthy, and Ian Anderson's out right now with a sore shoulder, you know, and they get Yanoa back, that's a team that could do damage in October with Charlie Morton, Max Fried, Yanoa, and Ian Anderson. That's a good rotation. If they add one more bat, you know, the lineup's a lot better. I'm looking at Starling Marte as a possibility there. They could really use a center fielder. But maybe they are done, you know, and maybe they just think they can make up that 3.5 games.
If I'm the Blue Jays, I'm buying. You're moving back into the ballpark in Toronto by the end of the month.
Yep.
You spent a lot of money on George Springer this year. You got Marcus Semien just for 1 year. So whether it's adding Nelson Cruz, you know, potentially in the deal as we get close to the deadline, adding some kind of a pitcher, I am buying. I think Kyle Gibson makes a lot of sense for that team because he's under team control for next year. What do you think?
Yeah, I know I mentioned Cruz in my write-up. That makes a lot of sense. A starter, no doubt about it. And, yeah, I know they're seven back. It's going to be hard to leapfrog both Boston and Tampa, but they've underperformed a little bit. Their run differential is plus 86, best in that division. I can see them really going on a nice streak here if the bullpen settles down, add one more hit, add another starter, and at the minimum, that gives them a good shot to win a wild card.
And if I'm the Mariners, the only deals I'm considering are deals which potentially help me in 2022. For example, and a great deal that went the other way for the Mariners, which I thought was an example of the deal I'm talking about. You remember when the Detroit Tigers made a trade for Doug Fister when he had like 2+ years of service time. The Tigers added him because not only would he help that year, but he would help in the years after that. That to me is the type of deal the Mariners should look for now. What do you think?
Yeah, Jerry DePoto had a quote last week after the draft that basically said that we are not going to change our strategy, and they've all along viewed 2021 as sort of that final rebuilding year, and 2022 is the year they're going to kind of go make that push for the playoffs. So I don't see it, you know. Yeah, Nelson Cruz would be a great fit in Seattle as well. They need a DH. They need right-handed power. Maybe they make a minor deal for like a Jonathan Schoop, but, you know, yeah, they're not going to – I don't see them making that big deal. And I don't think they're going to trade Mitch Haniger either. He has another year of team control. They need him next year. That outfield situation is not settled down. Jared Kelenic still not hitting. Kyle Lewis tore up his knee. Julio Rodriguez maybe ready, halfway through next year? So I think they keep Haniger. They need him next year.
All right, let's talk about the Oakland ballpark situation. There was a vote of the Oakland City Council yesterday, 6-1 in favor of a non-binding term sheet for the Oakland Athletics proposal, and yet it devolved into an argument. We could go down and get into the weeds of this thing, but I think big picture is where I want to keep it, because I feel like, I mean, this has been going on for 30 years of this back and forth between these two sides. They kind of remind me of, and you knew people like this, I knew people like this, the couple that were constantly arguing in college, and you didn't know if they were broken up or were they thinking about breaking up, but they would argue about breaking up, and you're like, geez, just either say yes or no. And
right.
So last night, you know, essentially the threats that come from the Athletics, well, you know, we're going to leave. And Rob Manfred, you know, saying we might help them leave. I'm like, just leave. If that's what you want to do, just do that.
Right.
Or the Oakland City Council, work with them if you want to keep them to make it work. But shut up.
Yeah, reading that news story and trying to make heads and tails of what's going on, it's clear neither side is happy with the other. So you're right. You hate to say it, it seems inevitable at this point. And, you know, their lease runs out after 2024. So I guess they're there until then. But we're hearing a lot more about Las Vegas, right? You know, Manfred mentioned them last week during the All-Star break, the A's ownership, what they've made 3 trips there this year. So it's looking to me, and I have no inside knowledge on this, but more and more like the A's are really starting to look at Las Vegas as a possibility.
Well, you're just waiting for one of the two sides to make a strong commitment, right?
Right.
The Oakland City Council wants to build the Oakland Athletics a new ballpark, then work on the language with them and get it done and focus on that. And if you're the Oakland Athletics and you really want to go to Las Vegas, then do it and stop doing this leverage stuff. The public leverage stuff, the Major League Baseball formed a blue ribbon panel to study the Oakland ballpark situation back in 2006. They were having arguments over the ballpark in the early 90s. Enough.
Yeah.
Like, get it done one way or the other, or else move out of there.
You know, and look, Oakland, it's a great city. It's really, you know, bounced back in recent years. But the A's, they've never been a great draw other than, you know, the Canseco McGuire years. And, of course, they made 3 World Series, right, in a row. So they had a great team. Even with all the success, you know, over the last decade, attendance isn't great. So that kind of leads me to ask, how much do the A's really want to stay there if your attendance cap is 2 million in a good year? You know, not that Las Vegas guarantees anything, but it just seems to me, you know, that they're going to be moving.
Yeah, and I think the objections on both sides are perfectly reasonable. Like, I wouldn't, you know, if I'm Oakland City Council and I'm leery of committing a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
The current circumstance, I don't blame them. You know,
no.
That's fine. But just come out and say that. Or if you're the Oakland Athletics and you've been waiting and waiting and waiting for some clarity in the ballpark situation and you're thinking about Las Vegas, that's perfectly reasonable. I look, it's not a public trust, right? They're free to move.
Yeah. Look, baseball, to its credit, you know, they've done a great job of trying to prevent franchises from moving, you know, and the Expos to D.C. is the only one since the Senators moved to Texas in 1972. So I think baseball deserves to be applauded for trying to keep teams in cities. But at the same time, that's not realistic. Markets change, you know, new cities, Vegas, Nashville, these cities are growing, Charlotte, into major metropolises that can probably support a major league franchise. So, you know, it's teams have to do what's right for them. And that sometimes now should consider, you know, looking at new markets.
All right. Last one for you. We saw the comments of Washington general manager Mike Rizzo yesterday, basically saying that Starlin Castro will never play for the Nationals again. We don't know the details of what Castro's case was under baseball's domestic violence policy. But Mike Rizzo really separating himself, distancing himself from Starlin Castro yesterday. Give Jeff Pass some credit. He talked last week about how the feelings have shifted in baseball with this. And the first strong indication that I can remember was after Roberto Osuna became available, made available by the Toronto Blue Jays after his domestic violence incident, only one team was interested at that time, and that was the Houston Astros. And now, if there is a prominent case, Dave, I don't know if any team would be interested. Like in the current climate, I just think teams are increasingly comfortable with the idea of moving on past players whose past really bothers them.
Right. No, and you mentioned public trust, in a different context. Yeah. But that's kind of what this is here. And whether this is right or wrong, there is a public trust between teams and fans. And when you have these domestic violence issues, that has to be considered. So I applaud Mike Rizzo for his apparent zero tolerance policy. I think it's the right decision. Obviously, things get a lot more complicated when it's a player of a higher stature than Starlin Castro. The Dodgers, Trevor Bauer's a better player. So it's not so easy to walk away from that, But any team that does it, I applaud them. You're supporting, in particular, your female fans. And I think that's absolutely the right move.
And I think increasingly, other players in organizations are letting their feelings be known.
Yes, that's a good point.
You have other guys saying, look, this guy did this to his spouse. He did this to his kids. No, I don't want him on the team. I think that players are getting more comfortable voicing their opinions, when it comes to that. So we'll be following this as we move forward. We'll see if Starlin Castro winds up being suspended by Major League Baseball under the domestic violence policy. All right, Dave, thanks for doing this.
All right, you bet, Buster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
So SportsCenter and Michelle Steele put together this piece on the all-female broadcast team. Give a listen.
For as long as there have been baseball broadcasts, just about every voice accompanying the action has come from a men's club. Not tonight. For the first time in MLB history, an all-female team will handle coverage. The pregame host is Heidi Watney. Melanie Newman will do play-by-play, with Sarah Langs providing analysis in the booth. Alana Rizzo is the on-field reporter, and the post-game host is Lauren Gardner.
Our main goal is just to make sure that it's a quality broadcast. And oh, by the way, there happens to be five very accomplished women giving you this information.
It's the first
of many. And the first is great, but we're going to make this more routine. We're going to make this normal. This isn't a novelty anymore. And that's so important.
As the radio voice of the Orioles, Melanie Newman is one of a handful of female play-by-play announcers working at the highest levels of her sport, a group that still hears demeaning comments from some fans who are opposed to hearing a woman's voice in the booth.
Other people's opinions of myself, unless they're cutting the paycheck or they're in a spot that I'd ultimately like to improve my career to, it's not my business. And it doesn't matter. And I have to say, the ratio of positive to negative has so drastically changed to the positive direction over the last decade.
The hope tonight is that greater representation will help inspire all kids who are also baseball fans that broadcasting can be a viable career path for those who work hard for it.
I think one of the best compliments you can receive is, hey, you know what? You know what you're talking about, and you're also my favorite broadcaster. Not that you're my favorite female broadcaster, but you're my favorite broadcaster.
In addition to traveling and prepping for the game, each of the women had to juggle multiple interview requests today as well. And although Rizzo told SportsCenter that she is among the five lucky enough to be selected for tonight's broadcast, there are, quote, many other women who are just as qualified to do it too. I'm Michelle Steele for ESPN.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Himbo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Paul Imbakides, a researcher for ESPN. He's also honcho on the show Get Up. We really think that he's in this job because he's a wild partier who Mike Greenberg loves to try to think about emulating. All right. You've become the official Milwaukee Brewers honk. I picked the Brewers because you picked the Brewers. I listened to your logic. Well, which, by the way, Hembo, I got to tell you, I've heard your logic from rival executives in the National League for why you're picking the Brewers. Everything that you said to me in March is what they're now saying to me in July. So you should take that as a compliment.
Well, it's about time I got something right.
So
I did not pick the Bucks. I did not pick the Bucks. I don't think I picked the Bucks in each of the last three rounds. So I'm on the Brewers, but I'm not so good at the basketball.
Let me ask you this. I got a Bucks sweatshirt. I'm not kidding about this. You know, I love watching Giannis play. And 18 months ago, I got a Bucks sweatshirt. I'm having an argument with my 17-year-old son about whether or not I've jumped on the bandwagon or I'm at the front of the bandwagon or I just am a Bucks guy. Well, how would you rate that?
I used to have all these rules about fandom where, like, you had to live in the region or you had to have a parent that rooted for – all that stuff's thrown out the window now with social media. I say you're going to do whatever you want. And it seems to me like you view the league very similarly to a lot of young people. Like, you root for players more so than teams. If Giannis were to change teams, obviously he's not going to now, but I might root for that team, you know, wherever he winds up going. That's sort of how kids now, root for teams and players around the league. And it's good to see Giannis be able to do it there of all places. I was so freaking happy for them.
That was a great non-response to my question, okay? I'm just telling you that one of the kids I was talking about, my son, is telling me that, no, I'm a bandwagon guy, having gotten that sweatshirt 18 months ago. And I told him, I'm like, you're not allowed to steal my Bucks sweatshirt as we move forward. All right. So you and I, every week, we collaborate on some research for Sunday Night Baseball to help make me sound smart on television. I sent you some questions this week about different elements of the team. You came back with great answers, but I'm only going to allow you to reveal one of those answers today about what makes the Brewers great. Which one did you pick?
I picked the Craig Council section of our email, and that's because I think it's very difficult, at least it has been traditionally, to evaluate how good a manager is in baseball. It's nearly impossible, but by the ways by which we can do it, he grades out very, very favorably. Here's what I mean. Buster, over the last five seasons, the Brewers own the best record in all of baseball in one-run game. They've won nearly 60% of them, and during that time, the gap between their record and their expected record is the largest amongst National League teams. Further, during Council's time as manager, Brewers relief pitching, they rank fourth in baseball in win probability added. And perhaps more impressively, they rank first in out rate and high leverage. They've retired about 76% of hitters in those situations. So when you consider his teams do better than most any other team in one-run games, that they outperform their run differential, and that he uses his bullpen Though we have some nice arms on the back end, traditionally he uses his bullpen as well as anybody in baseball. It's hard for me right now to make an argument that there's a definitively better manager in baseball right now, or at least in the National League, than Craig Counsell.
Yeah, I got him and Alex Cora as being the two best managers
in baseball. I'm there. Yep. What do you think? I'm with you. That makes a good bit of sense to me. Counsell has done it for now 7 years and has done so with a small market team, and they've consistently been great in areas in which managers really shine or fail. And more often than not, as I described there numerically, his teams have shined.
This Sunday, the Brewers are likely to face Lance Lynn and the White Sox. Lynn the other day got a contract, 2 years and $38 million, which, you know, when I first saw that number, my initial reaction was something that Jim Hayes, who does Cardinals television, tweeted out that Lance Lynn once said to him, you know, the more money I make, the better looking I get, which I thought was a really funny line from Lance Lynn. What did you think about the value of that 2-year, $38 million deal?
Tremendous. For my money, Buster, Lance Lynn is the most underrated pitcher in all of baseball. And I'll put a few numbers to that. Over the last three seasons, he leads all American League pitchers in WAR. Second and third are Gerrit Cole and Shane Bieber. So in an era of, I guess, specialization, Lynn is anything but that. He leads the league in batters faced during that time and has been equally effective against righties and against lefties. And lastly, Buster, his fastball, as you know, is just a truly dominant pitch. He has struck out 309 batters with it since 2019, most by any pitcher with any pitch over that span.
Yeah, he's tremendous, and you absolutely love his approach. 9 days until the trade deadline. Shockingly few trades so far. As we sit here today, which team for you is most in need of moves?
The team most in need of making a move or multiple moves is the New York Mets. Right now, Buster, the Mets are 2.5 games clear of the Phillies, but the rest of the way, as I described last week on the podcast, the Mets own the hardest schedule amongst National League East teams. The Phillies own the easiest schedule in all of baseball. And even if you're to say that the Mets would be the favorite to win their division, even without making big moves, the team that we just talked about, the Brewers, which would be the team they would likely face in the first round, has a lot more artillery than they do. So even if the Mets aren't looking, even if the Mets are looking past the Phillies and their division, which I don't think they should, they definitely need to add at least one, if not two bats before the trade deadline. And I also think they at least need one reliever, not to mention the fact that with all these injuries in the starting rotation, there's really no part of that roster that you'd feel comfortable saying we're good here. So amongst all the buyers, the Mets to me should be the most aggressive.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. Chris Sale was absolutely outstanding last night in his minor league rehabilitation start. We'll wait to hear from Alex Cora later today whether or not, in fact, his next start will be in the big leagues. That would be my guess. Because they just had this rain out. They're going to need a starter. If I'm the Red Sox, I'm thinking, you know, five innings from Chris Sale on Sunday is better than having him throw him in the minor leagues. How much of a difference could a healthy Chris Sale make in the American League spectrum? And I'll preface as part of my question to you as well. I just in talking with Red Sox people at Yankee Stadium over the weekend, they think Sale looks spectacular. They have slow played his rehabilitation. Haven't pushed him, didn't try to go too fast, and he looks great.
Well, I think the Red Sox being as good as they've been, perhaps even better than most of us thought, has gone a long way in enabling them to slow play him because they really don't need him right now. They obviously want him, but they really have not needed him. They obviously will at some point here over the next few months. Buster, he's been out of the game so long that I needed to remind myself how dominant this guy was. All you have to do is look at some of the top of the all-time leaderboards. The all-time leader in strikeout rate, the all-time leader in strikeout to walk rate. And if you recall, for most of Chris Sale's career, he has been just utterly dominant through the summer. But as we've learned in September and then in October, sometimes he will fade. He just doesn't have the body that enables him to throw 250 dominant innings every year. That won't be an issue now. Chris Sale can come in, he can start the race at the, you know, at mile 15 and sprint to the finish in a way that we know he can. So the stuff absolutely looks like it plays up. I, like you, watched the video of his outing yesterday. He was spinning his slider. It looked like a frisbee. I mean, the stuff looked awesome. The mechanics look clean to me. I expect him to be impactful right away. And you could argue, I suppose, in that case, so long as he can give them innings, that he could be the biggest addition that any team could add during this period here. Obviously, you're not trading for Chris Sale. But if Chris Sale were available to be traded for, he'd be a pitcher that a lot of teams would be clamoring for. Am I right?
I agree with you. And I also think that based on what we've seen from Sale, based on what we've seen for the rest of the team, based on what we're looking at with the baseball landscape, if the Red Sox get Chris Sale back, and, you know, at this point we expect they would, and they go out and they're aggressive and they would have called the Cubs and said, look, you know, we'll give you a good package of prospects for a twofer for Craig Kimbrell and Anthony Rizzo, you know, Rizzo to plug first base for the Red Sox for the next 2 months before he becomes a free agent, Kimbrell to help that bullpen. That team, for me, Hembo would be the favorite to win the World Series.
Wow, to win the whole thing. Okay, so to me, that definitely puts them ahead of the White Sox in the American League. It puts them as the clear favorite within their division. The Astros are the team that I still really, really like. So that's the club that I'm going to keep my eye on. But yes, of course, Kimbrell plus Rizzo plus Sale equals a much better team than they have right now. And right now, they're obviously amongst the contenders to do it. I still think that in order to win the World Series in 2021, you're going to need another pitcher or two that misses a lot of bats. That's been the one thing. The Red Sox are really average in that area. Chris Sale obviously goes a long way in helping them do that. But I still think when you look at teams that have been successful in recent years, they're going to need to be able to get outs from their relievers, and they're going to need to have those guys miss a bunch of bats, which makes Craig Kimbrell make perfect sense for them in theory, I suppose. But that to me is the one area that I would prioritize for them. And if that means passing on Anthony Rizzo or another position player, then so be it.
Well, I'd say this. I think Anthony Rizzo makes their pitching better.
That's a good argument.
I wish I had asked you that, you know, asked you to look into this question before, and I'd love to see what the numbers are in terms of digging balls out of the dirt, the success they've had, how many errors they've had, you know, with throwing, because that would be something where I think Rizzo would help the rest of that infield.
No doubt it's a good angle, because especially with the guys on the left side of that infield, like, that's definitely another cause for concern. Like, this is far from a perfectly constructed roster, and beyond the bat that Rizzo would be able to provide, like, that a key scoop or two in a playoff series can make all the difference. Like, when you're as good as the Red Sox are, you can think about things in the margins like that, and perhaps they will.
All right, Hembo, great to talk with you. Great information. I'll be in touch with you as the week goes.
Later.
Bleacher Tweets. All righty, we got Bleacher Tweets for a Wednesday. We're going to start with Lee Patrick Sullivan at the LPS Beat. Since May 3rd, the Tigers are 7 games above 500. They swept the Yankees and won series against the Astros and Indians. Miggy batted 324 in June. Does Detroit get the Buster-only seal of approval as being the best of the bad teams?
Yeah, Lee, it's funny you mentioned that. Yesterday, I was turning in my power rankings, where you turn in, you know, how you see the teams, number 1 through number 30, and the Tigers took a big jump for me. And they're kind of been more in the middle of the pack and away from the Baltimores and the Arizona Diamondbacks, you know, clubs like that, because they are playing a lot better. It looks like this year is going to be a year of big progress for the Tigers.
This one comes from Charlie Stoker at Stoker_Charlie. Do you see the Rockies trading Trevor Story? And if so, where do you think he will end up?
I don't know, because I think that the Rockies, not only are they going to want at least the equivalent of what they would get if they kept him, which is the draft pick that they would receive if he signed someplace else, you know, and they kept him all the way into free agency. They're going to want more than that, because he's a big name. But it just reminds you, they've already blown this. Like, they should have traded him last offseason. They should have traded him at the same time they traded Nolan Arenado. So when the dust settles, Nolan Arenado will be gone, Trevor Story will be gone, and they will have gotten far less value in return than they should have. They needed to be proactive in this case, and they just simply were not. So I don't know if they're going to trade him. You know, you can bet that a team like the Mets potentially could be interested. Other teams would love to have a player like Trevor Story, but the Rockies are just not going to get the value back that they should have gotten, especially knowing in the wintertime they were not going to win the National League West. Like, we knew, you know, 18 months ago that the Dodgers were better than they are, that the Padres are better than they are. It was a colossal mistake by the Rockies front office and how they handled this.
Maybe the A's try to chase the Astros a little bit.
Well, what I hear about the Athletics is that they're indicating to other teams that they don't have that much money. And so if you're going to, you know, take on Trevor Story, there's going to be a lot of salary there, and that potentially could be a problem for Oakland.
This one comes from PK Steinberg at PK Steinberg. Do you think a player's vaccination status may have any bearing on whether or not he is either a trade target or indeed traded?
I think there's potential, yes, because we're seeing, you know, these COVID outbreaks. And, you know, let me just, because this player has talked about his decision publicly, let's talk about Anthony Rizzo with the Chicago Cubs. You know, you're the Boston Red Sox, and you've managed to keep COVID, you know, out of your clubhouse. You have a good, you know, culture in your mind for how you're handling that. Are you going to pause, perhaps, because a player isn't vaccinated? I think you will. I think teams are going to be asking that question, you know, general manager to general manager. Hey, by the way, is Anthony Rizzo vaccinated? You know, is this player vaccinated? I think that's just a reality of this moment. What do you think, Nathan? I got to believe that question is going to be asked.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a possibility. I thought it was an interesting take on the trade deadline with everything that's going on in the world. I mean, yeah, we'll see. It seems like maybe the Yankees will take anyone. That's what I'm noticed over the season. And then finally, Corey Childs at M Corey Childs. I heard the Braves have lost 22 games by the bullpen this year. Last year, that wasn't even close to a problem. If they get proper help in the bullpen by the trade deadline, could they come back and win the division?
It's interesting. I think that, you know, we were talking with Dave about what the Braves might do. If they do add bullpen help, I don't think it would be substantial. Like, I think some Braves fans would love to see them go all in on Craig Kimbrell. I would be surprised if that happens. Brian Snitker, their manager, has absolutely believed that what the turnaround that you could see is actually from the guys within that group. Like, if you look at their history, they have guys who've had success in the past, and he absolutely believes they could have success in the future.
All righty, those are all the Bleacher Tweets for Wednesday. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter for tomorrow.
That's it for today. My thanks to Hembo, to Dave, and Mr. Malibu. Nice job the last 2 days. Have you had fun?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday was awesome. My adrenaline was pumping after I put the final touches on everything and got that episode out.
Did you just collapse exhausted after getting it out?
Fully. I think it was a combination of the adrenaline and the caffeine, but I definitely crashed and my brain was struggling with some of the edits I needed to make in the second half of my day. But it was definitely cool to see it go up, and I shared it with a bunch of friends and family, and they got a kick out of it.
Well, great job of that. And I hope now that you're done the second one, that you don't do a Taylor-like thing and go off and have like 40 drinks in like 48 hours, okay? Just lay low, because you're going to need you for tomorrow's podcast as well.
Yeah, I'll try to lay low.
Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.